Brandela.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You have some questions tonight?
No, I just have a comment. I was wondering, why are they having so many fires in bad things happening right now in California?
On the physical level, you know the answer to that, right?
Right.
So what is the physical reason?
Well, I want to say it's because we're not doing what we need to do spiritually.
That's not the physical reason. The physical
okay.
reason comes from science. It says that there hasn't been rain. It's the land is dried out. The trees are kindling wood. And the spark sets it off, and it's the Santa Ana winds, which are winds that blow from the land to the sea, which is an unusual pattern of the winds blowing. Normally they blow from the seas to the land. And because of when the wind blows from the land to the sea, they blow down the mountain, so they get faster and drier, and it becomes the sparks starts the kindling of the trees. The fires whip up, and the wind makes it worse and more expansive, and that's the physical reason why there are fires. And the locations are the four different fires. One in Los Angeles, one in the Bay Area with the Northern California, one in Malibu, and the other in someplace else. So it's east of San Bernardino, I believe. So that's why the physical reason. The spiritual reason, you have to look at the areas. What is going on in the areas? And I'll give you, move away from the California and go back to the hurricanes. And look at it in the terms of, where is the central column? The hurricanes, destruction by wind and water, mostly by flood zones, mostly the coasts. What is the general actions of people in those areas that have been hit by the hurricanes? It's the what are the political, not the political, but the worldviews of the people in the areas that have come under the direction of the floods and the rains and the hurricanes and the winds?
Well, I want to say that they're negative, and that they're whatever they want it just for themselves, but they don't want it to help other people.
I don't know the area. I don't know the people. I cannot say that you're right. I cannot say you're wrong. What I can say is a general rule, the water destroys the right wing and fire destroys the left leaning people, the left side of the political environment in the United States. And the Torah is telling us always to look for the middle path, for the central column. So, what is the spiritual reason? It's to show people that the path to take is not on the left, and it's not on the right. It's It's to find the central column. Where do most of the right-wing conservative people, I'll say even Christians, what's the term that people use? I always forget the word. The people who follow Billy Graham and the like.
Well, I don't know what other people call them, but I call them holy rollers.
Okay. Well, they're not holy. Holy rollers is a spiritual sect. These are people who consider themselves reborn Christians. They consider themselves... it starts with a P, but I always forget the word. It'll come to me in time.
Okay.
And California tends to be very left-leaning. You know, and they want to save other people, but only if they do it their way. They're not giving people free choice. And they're very hedonistic. Malibu is a very hedonistic. You know, very wealthy environment, very hedonistic, very, you know, keep away from me, follow what I do. You know, they don't, a lot of the people don't use their wealth to help other people. They use their wealth to display it in these huge homes and so forth.
Mark.
Good evening, Malka.
Thank you.
The question that was asked was, why were there four big fires in California? And you can listen to the earlier part of the class, but essentially the answer that I gave, or that I'm giving, is that the Torah teaches us to remain, to search, to act according to the central column. To find the balance, and that the fires are destroying the left, the more progressive, the more affluent, but the more, you know, they're not really taking care of other people. They're building these big homes for just, you know, showing their wealth and aggrandizing. And the people who were hurt by hurricanes and floods are people who tend to be on the right, who tend to be evangelicals. That's the word I was looking for.
Oh, okay.
They tend to be evangelicals in the areas that have been hurt by the by the hurricanes, the floods, the wind, the water, the rain. So I perceive these events as telling us, reminding us to search for the central column. Are there any other questions?
Other questions?
You're welcome.
it's not pertaining to the fires, but my question is, in Jacob's... and Rachel and Leah. And it says that Jacob was in his 84 when he reached Laban's, I think. I think it was his 75 or some to that age when he left.
He was 60 when he left the house, and he was 70. But he was roughly 80 years old.
Okay. My next question is, when he reached Laban's house and he saw Rachel and he had to work 7 years for her, we were talking about how old Leah and Rachel were. And I said, well, my thoughts is that she was young, very young, when he reached Laban's house. And I was thinking May of 13, that she was probably maybe 6 or 7. And then he had to wait 7 years to marry her, which would have made her 12, 13 years old. Of course, Leah was, what, maybe 2 years older than she was, possibly?
No.
So
no,
Leah would have
twins.
Been about... Okay.
The twins.
Then I said, well, the other thing would be that she was in her teens, like... I'm not sure how old the second scenario would be. So our questions were, how young were they when you reached Laban's house?
I don't know exactly, but I thought they were 20 when Leah married. And then a week later, Rachel married. So essentially they were 20 or 21. That was my sense. But I don't know exactly. There are people, and if you go on Google, you can Google a timeline. And in Wikipedia, you can find a timeline for the birth of Rachel and Leah. But they were twins.
They were twins? Okay.
They were twins. And what happened, Jacob worked 7 years on the promise of marrying Rachel. And at the end of the 7 years, Laban fooled him, and so he married Leah. But then the first week of their marriage is called Sheva Brachot. It's a ritual, a very special ritual that helps the marriage settle, the souls settle into the marriage and to the relationship with each other. But at the end of that week, Laban and Jacob came to an understanding that he would work another 7 years for Rachel. But he did not have to wait 7 years to marry Rachel. He married Rachel immediately after the week was up of Leah's Sheva Brachot. And then he worked the 7 years, and then he worked 6 more years, which was the years of his developing his wealth. So that's the timeline I understand while he was in Laban's house.
Okay, because I know, you know, to have children, I mean, that was the purpose of marrying and to have children. And when they're up in their 20s, I thought in those years, or in the biblical years, that was pretty old to start having children. I mean, I know that some women had, you know, Sarah had him when she was, you know, in her 90s. But you know, to build Jacob's house, you know, that to me, I thought that was a little old, considering back even in some generations in my generation's past, you know, women would get married when they're 13, 14, 15 years old so they could have large families. So I'm, you know, I was like, man, that's a little old back in biblical time to start having children. I always thought they had them quite early.
In biblical times, the women were, they didn't wait to get married. It's, you know, it's like in Orthodox Jewish circles today, a girl of 18 is looking for, you know, her parents are finding her her marriage partner then.
Okay.
And, you know, I was speaking to the rabbi in this building. You know, he has a daughter who was going to New York to meet her intended to see if they would, if there was chemistry between them. But it's an arranged marriage with the parents, providing that the chemistry is there. And I asked him how old she was. He said 22. And It wasn't appropriate for me to ask, isn't that rather late? But I know that is rather late. Normally, they started looking around 17, 18.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I always wondered.
But also, it's important for you to realize that Yocheved, Moshe's mother, was 130 when she bore Moses.
Right, and I think I have to remember that their lifespan was a lot longer than our lifespan. Yeah.
Yeah, Jacob lived 147 years. It's only until the Torah was given that the full lifespan became 120 years. And as I've been told by the modern Kabbalists, it's now extended back up. It's 190 years is the full lifespan.
Okay. Okay.
But the childbearing ages, I don't think changed. It was from, menses until menopause, which is about roughly 30 to 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Sure, that's true. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they were possibly in their 20s, early 20s, 20s, or right at 20?
Yes.
When they married. Okay.
There was a midrash that says that while the people, the Esav and Jacob lived in the land of Israel, and Leah and Rachel lived in the land of Iraq, it's about 300 to 400 miles distant, separated them, but people, there were caravans going back and forth, and that they would bring news of each other's, of all the different locations to keep in touch. It wasn't instantaneously, but there was constant communication. The idea was people were saying that since they were two sets of twins born to the relatives, people were saying that Leah would marry Esav and Rachel would marry Jacob. And that's what they were planning, that was the gossip. But when the news would come back to Leah, what kind of man is Esav? And she heard about his recklessness and all his negative traits. She spent years praying that she wouldn't have to marry him. And that's why she was described in the Torah as being red-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact phrases, but...
I think it said weak eyes or something.
Weak eyes, yeah. Something like that. It's because she was crying all the time.
Right.
Praying
I didn't
God
understand
that.
Right.
Exactly.
Another question. Rachel, Jacob's mother was still living at the time that Jacob was returning back to Israel? From Iraq back to Israel? Or did she had passed?
It says at the end of Parasha Vayetse, it says that Rivka's, Jacob ben Esav's mother, that she died. But it doesn't say she died, it says her maid died, her handmaid died.
Right.
I think the handmaid's name is Deborah.
Right.
Okay, and it's, if you understand what the Zohar says, that Isaac represents the soul after the completion of the tikkun. And Rivka represented the body after the completion of the tikkun. So if Rivka were to die, that metaphor wouldn't work. So it never says that Rivka died. It only, the Midrash tells us that Rivka is buried next to Isaac in the cave of Machpelah. But it doesn't say that Rivka died in the Torah. It says her handmaid died. And the Talmud then comes and explains that that's a code word, code description for the when Rivka died. But it can't say that because it would mean that right. The resurrection of the dead has a limitation.
So, with that said, I thought Deborah went and met Jacob on the way back to Canaan because, I guess what questions I'm trying to get to is that did Rachel ever meet him up? The way, along the way back to Israel. So my question is, did Rivka ever meet Leah and Rachel?
The answer is yes.
Yes, okay.
When he was married and he was brought his 11 children back, that's when her tikkun with her son was complete. Remember, the reason people die is because their tikkun is complete. So mm-hmm. until the 12 children were there, the 11 physically born and the one that was in the womb for Rachel, until the 12 tribes were physically there, Rivka's tikkun with her sons was not complete.
So why does it say that Rachel died along the way? Along the way where?
On the way to bring the whole family back to the father's house. She died when she was giving birth.
And Rivka was
She died because Jacob had said to Laban, when Laban caught up to Jacob and the group, Jacob said, "Whoever stole your idol should die." And he didn't know what he was saying because he didn't know that she had stolen it. But because childbirth is a time of judgment for a woman. When she went into birth, she died in childbirth. And only she died according to what the Talmud says, she died because Jacob had made that statement and she was vulnerable to the evil eye of his words and his charge. And so therefore she was buried on the way to act as a Sugula, to act as an antidote to evil eye and evil words. That's why Rachel is the person that we wrap the red strings around, if you've ever had that discussion and that teaching.
So Rivka was still alive at that point. And she gave birth to Benjamin.
Yes, but I'm not sure if I'd have to review the verses to see if Rivka died before or after Rachel. But Rachel was, they arrived in the land of Israel. So you have 11 sons born outside. And one was born in Israel, which is Benjamin.
Right.
And on that, at, when he was born, that night she died. She named him, and then she passed away. And then Jacob changed the name because it was a negative name that he didn't want to leave the child with.
Right. Okay. So I just took it that, you know, on the way, and I took that on the way back to Israel, that possibly Rivka never met her daughter-in-law. And that's how I was taken on the way. You know, she died on the way. So I never...
Exactly, by the way, another way of translating the sentence, because it's a bet, mm-hmm. is the first letter, so, or a lamed is the first letter, I forget. But it can be translated as on the way or by the way. But it's... Benjamin was born in the land of Israel.
Right.
So they had arrived, but they may not have gotten settled into to Isaac. But I think, you know, I think they arrived, and I'm quite certain that Rivka and Isaac met the grandchildren before to know that their tikkun was complete, that the continuity that they represented was complete.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And that would be the first time she saw Isaac. I mean, first time she saw Joseph. I'm sorry, God. First time she saw Jacob, I'll get the name right, was when he was returning with his 11 sons. After
right.
he left his father's house. Okay. Then he would have been...
Rivka would have...
Right.
And Isaac did see Jacob and the four and the 11 sons. Whether they saw Rivka, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Because it could be that Rivka may have died when Rachel died with the birth. Or it could be that the pregnancy was sufficient for them to know that the 12 sons were there.
I see.
I never read it, didn't really study it along those lines.
Yeah, they may have entered Israel, the land of Israel, because Benjamin was born. Yeah.
They definitely were in the land of Israel because Benjamin was born in the land of Israel.
But we don't know at that point. We don't know if Rivka and Isaac met them prior to her decease.
We don't know about Rachel. But again, if you do a Google search for the calendar, for the line of the line of creation, you will find the answer to that question.
Okay.
Because in those calendars, in those lines that they just, I forget what they call them, the history, that they go, you know, they give you the dates of all the major events, including the deaths of the people and the births of the people.
Okay. And that's on Google, and what's it called? Line of Creation?
Go to Google or to Wikipedia, either one, and type in the death of Rivka, of Rebecca, and the death of Rachel, and they'll tell you the years.
Okay. And that's a good source, that Google search is a good source to reference?
I'm sorry, say it again?
That Google search is a good reference, a bona fide good reference to learn the timelines?
Yeah, because you then can look and see what, there may be 10 different timelines, and so you can look and see what the source of the timelines are. Are they Jewish sources or not? Mm-hmm. So that's the benefit of Google. It's not that it's always true, but you have the ability to evaluate what's the source of the information.
Okay.
Or you can go to a Chabad.org and get the same and ask the same question in their search box, see what they say.
Okay.
Any other questions? With you all, shalom and shalom gadol. Tomorrow we will have 4:30 West Coast time. We will have the Deep Zohar on Lech Lecha, section 12. And at 7 o'clock, we will have our Parasha Zohar, and the Parasha Vayetze. Shalom to all.
Shalom. Thank you, Hannah.
You're welcome. Take care, Randy.
Okay.
Shalom.
Shalom.